WBH Radio, your host William Holly, episode number 53. As always, I appreciate you guys checking in. Joining me today is one of the brightest and coolest young men I've met in a long time. I mean, I reached out to this brother and asked him to help me with everything from sprucing up my resume to, yo, what's the name of these sneakers I'm interested in, man? The one and only Kyle Giannini.
The Bobby Abreu episode, 53, in case anyone was trying to press me about this Yankees knowledge we're about to get into. That is me. Appreciate you having me on, bro, for real.
Nah, for real. I see you ready, man. I see you ready. We got to take our time and get into it, man. You ready, son? When's the last time we saw one another?
It was about maybe 54 weeks ago, I think, to the day. You know, a lot of these memories are coming up on social media of like a year ago today, this, yeah. Arizona, that, and, you know, handling flights, this. Man, it's been a whirlwind since.
54 weeks. That might be it. It was my birthday. That's how I remember it. March 14, 2020. We was trying to get the hell out of Tucson, Arizona. The pandemic was coming. The apocalypse was about to happen. Kyle, let the people know why we were even out there.
Yeah, so we were out there as two of six World Baseball Classic national team coordinators. So there were 12 qualifying teams. We each were responsible for two. And mine were the Philippines and Team Germany. Your two teams were?
Brazil and New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes. Right, because you had the wild time difference with them. But no, I mean, we were acting as just the primary contacts between the World Baseball Classic Incorporated and our assigned national team. So that handled everything from just travel to uniforms to on the ground to in the air. So, I mean, truly just all bases of their experience that all ran through us for better or for worse. There were a lot of entities that we had parts in, a lot of entities that we did not want parts in but had parts in anyways. So that's how that went.
Yeah, and the coronavirus shut that down. And I think we really missed out on a special event. I don't think people understand, like, prior to us getting to Tucson, we were working in the Major League Baseball home office here in New York City and serving as a liaison with these teams. Like, we were making sure they were eligible, you know, to represent their respective teams. We handled their travel, hotels, airfare. And we did all that work, and then we finally get to Arizona and we get to be around these young athletes, these young men. And it was exciting to be a part of, because a lot of these young people, this is their first ever opportunity to represent their country in international competition. And I know when people think of the Olympics, oh, it's a big time athletes or something. Like, some of these guys, just regular everyday guys, and they were really excited about this opportunity. I remember there was one guy from Brazil who, he made the event because some other players had got injured.
Yes.
You know, and I remember we were fighting hard to determine his eligibility, because he grew up in California, but his mom was the offspring of Brazilians, so he was like a third generation Brazilian. We had to figure out his eligibility, and we finally got it at the last minute. He was so excited to be in Tucson. So to see that event not be able to go on, it was tough, man.
It was very tough, yeah. And it's just funny, like, speaking to your point about just the range and occupations that people had when they weren't playing baseball. Mm-hmm. So some, they're affiliated players, like, they does this, like, they get paid very handsomely to play the game.
Right.
On the other side of things, there was a couple guys from Team Germany that they were like, yeah, when I'm not playing, I'm an accountant.
Yeah.
I'm like, word.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then conversely, there were a couple of guys that were like 15, 16 years old on Team Pakistan. That was wild to me to be able to, you know, rep your nation across your chest and not even be able to be of age. But yeah, definitely interesting experience.
Kyle had the biggest star of them all coming on one of his teams.
Yeah, his name was Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow, who has since retired from the game of baseball. And, I mean, I wasn't even all that hyped to meet him just because it was, I mean, I know Tim is watching. But
What team was he going to be on?
Team Philippines. I know people probably thought Germany off rip, but that is not the case. I think his mother was actually born, or rather is Filipino.
Right.
And so that is what cleared his eligibility to represent my motherland. But no, with that said, I think it would have been a whole lot more to handle than I would have liked to in terms of a special car for himself and a special hotel room for himself. But yeah, Tim Tebow was a big name in March 2020.
Working in Major League Baseball, you know, anybody that knows me, my background is basketball. I played college basketball. but I had started with the Yankees in 2017. And so I kind of had some connections in Major League Baseball. I had my resume in baseball. So when the job popped up, I took it. You know, it's a job. It's better than digging ditches and stuff. So it was cool. You know, if you got to get up and go to work every day, baseball's not the worst thing. But I remember one day in the office, I saw you and some of our coworkers having conversations. And I said it out loud, but I was really just thinking it. I said, wow, you guys are really baseball fans. Like, yeah. Y'all really do this, man. It's not just a job for y'all, son. So, Kyle, when did you fall in love with the game?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. It kind of like came on my own. Like, yeah. In the Philippines, basketball is just the like Bible. It's everything. Mm-hmm. Kobe's a god out there. And even boxing, too, with Manny Pacquiao. But with baseball, it's funny. Like, people ask me, like, yo, how'd you get into the game? Like, there aren't very many Filipinos or even Asian Americans in the game mm-hmm. overall. Bro, one day over the summer, I was maybe like second or third grade, and I'm just watching Yankees Mets. Mm-hmm. Yankees were winning. I was like, I guess I'm a Yankee fan. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting a glove at Modell Sporting Goods, RIP, yeah. No longer in existence, mm-hmm. and a tennis ball, and I just threw it off the brick wall outside my crib at about 7-8 years old. From there, it's been love since. So okay. It's a true urban love story.
Now, you mentioned a Filipino background, but you were raised in New York, though, right?
Yeah, born and raised in Queens. Born and raised in Queens, for sure.
What year were you born?
95.
95. Yeah. So if you're talking about being a Yankee fan, 95 to present day, you grew up idolizing
Derek Jeter.
Derek Jeter.
The reason I'm a Yankee fan. Because, you know, a lot of people press me like, yo, like, how are you a Mets fan? You grew up 2 miles away from Shea Stadium, Citi Field.
You mean how are you a Yankees fan?
Correct. Right. Yeah, they're like, yo, this is all true. However, Derek Jeter was my guy growing up. Yeah. And at that point, said people are like, you know what? That's fair.
And you actually played college baseball, right?
I did, yeah. I was a walk-on at Wheaton College in Massachusetts. And I think for me heading into it, I really learned a lot about like, the Division III experience, mm-hmm. Something that you could speak to as mm-hmm. well. I think a lot of people probably like lowbrow it or undermine it in terms of it being just an extension of high school mm-hmm. in terms of like not being all that competitive. Mm-hmm. But Wheaton was a top 25 program in the nation. So being able to say that like, yo, like I made the cut from the tryout, yeah. off the tryout, off rip cold. Mm-hmm. That was something I'm really proud of for real.
And you played shortstop?
Short and second. Yeah. I'd never played second in my life, but after getting some reps at short, the coach asked if I played second. I was like, yeah, absolutely. No shot, bro. But you got to do what you got to do.
And you wore number?
Well, growing up, I was wearing number 2. But when you a walk-on, they're like, yo, you get whatever.
You got to take what
you gave me. 16, but bro. Whatever. Whatty for it.
Got you. So let's get into some of this Yankee stuff, man. Talking with Kyle Giannini, the Yankee fan, played shortstop. The Yankee season ended in October 2020. They lost to the Tampa Bay Rays in the playoffs. After that game, you said, I need to see the Yankees do what in the offseason?
Pitching, for sure. I think the offense is, in 2020, certainly an anomaly in that it came and went and that it resulted in a record that was way worse than people thought it would have been. But to answer your question, definitely re-signed DJ LeMahieu, but then right after that, like 1A and 1B mm-hmm. was improved the starting pitching for sure because it just felt like it was Cole. And then whatever happened after that, we just held our breath, right? Tanaka is typically a really good postseason performer, but had a couple of bad outings this mm-hmm. past year. And again, it was definitely starting pitching. That was like the biggest thing for sure.
Did they fill that hole in the offseason?
I think they did. I would have really liked, to my point before about Tanaka, would have really liked to see him come back. Mm-hmm. He's not only well-liked, but has performed at a really high level for mm-hmm. several years with the Yankees, especially in the postseason. Like, yo, in the postseason, he shoves. He levels up for mm-hmm. real. But no, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get into it, but Kluber and Tyone, those are very notable names. Kluber, he's won 18 games 3 separate times. He's a multiple Cy Young Award winner. Tyone, he's a very promising pitcher as well.
Those are two guys that the Yankees signed as free agents?
Yeah. They were acquired. Tyone via trade, Kluber via signing, yeah.
Okay, back in 2017 when I was with the Yankees, I remember Corey Kluber played for the Indians, and they called him Klubot because he was a machine.
Yeah, he's nice.
And he was unstoppable. I haven't heard his name since, Kyle. Mm-hmm. Why is that something to get excited about?
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of these headlines are a whole lot of like, yo, like, is he going to get back to his former self? Like, does he still have it and all that? I think that it's still worth being excited about because he doesn't have a lot of mileage since those like peak years. Right. And that's a good and a bad thing. Good thing because he hasn't had the mileage on his arms, on his arm, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the bad thing is like, yo, like, do you still got it? Are you washed?
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he only pitched like one game, legit one game, and then he came out. So it was,
wow, was that due to injury?
He was injured. Yeah, he went down. Mm-hmm. But I guess we're going to see what he's got when he comes back.
So what are you doing to spring training?
Spring training, he did it right. Spring training, he did it right. We can pull those numbers up. But from what we saw, I think that you can't really get too caught up in the numbers of spring training. I think that it's really just down to stuff, right? Like, you live with the result, but you fall in love with the process. That goes with anything in life. But, yeah, Kluber, he's been looking good. He's been looking good in spring training.
Okay, and the other guy you mentioned?
Tyone.
Yeah.
Jameson Tyone.
He been balling or no?
Nah, he's good. He's good. I think that he's had multiple arm injuries and multiple injuries overall. And I think that that's something that a lot of people are a little bit hesitant about, mm-hmm. in terms of like how he's going to do in the long term. But Gerrit Cole is like a mad big advocate of Jameson Tyone because they were actually teammates in Pittsburgh. And he was like, yo, like, this is a guy you got to get. Cole helped recruit Tyone to come to the Yankees. Obviously, it was via trade, but mm-hmm. he was very much in the front office's ear to get him to come through.
Kyle, I don't know, man. I hope you're not putting your Yankee fandom on there. It sounds like we're just pulling guys off of the scrap heap. And one thing that frustrates me about the Yankees is that it's always like they're looking out there trying to see somebody else's prospect. Who's in the Yankee farm system as far as arms?
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to see it now, right? A Michael King, a Clark Schmidt, Loaisiga are all guys that have like kind of just scratched the surface right. a little bit in either 19 and or 20. And yo, like, these guys have all come up through the system, or if not come up through the system, are very much like they got a lot of options between the minors and the Yankees big league club. Davey Garcia, like, there's a lot of names on here mm-hmm. that are very notable. So yeah, it looks like they're looking outward, but I mean, every team is mm-hmm. as far as their system within. Yo, they got some arms, bro. They're going to be good.
So give me the rotation.
So the rotation, I mean, there are some that are projected here. It's really just a battle for that fifth spot. So Cole is a lock at the ace, right? Kluber, two. Tyone, three. Montgomery's been looking really good at four. And then five, I mean, yo, it's up in the air between Davey Garcia, Michael King, Domingo Germán. Might go Germán. Germán's had some issues off the field.
Right.
But as far as his abilities on the field, those cannot be questioned for sure.
Gerrit Cole was the big free agent signing last year. He yeah. signed for 9 years, $324 million. Now, I know the city was excited. When I see stuff like that, my thing is that you want value. Mm-hmm. No matter how good he is, Kyle, he can't live up to that contract. You know, the great years are when he's putting in the work at Houston, and he's working himself to a position where he's deserving of a big contract. Like, right. the Houston Astros got the value from him, right? They got prime time years, big time innings, but at a smaller price. So the Yankees come in, they give this big contract. It's like they say when you buy a new car, the minute you pull it off the lot, yep. it depreciates.
Yep.
So Cole had a cool year last year. You know, what'd you think?
He was reliable, right? In terms of like
324 million, Kyle. I need more than just reliable.
No, totally agree. But yo, I mean, he also hasn't. My boy made a great point recently. He goes, yo, Gerrit Cole hasn't pitched in front of Yankee fans yet. In terms of like actually supporting him and not mm-hmm. chirping him in an Astros uniform, that I think will not only make a difference, but yeah, I mean, it's just like with any sport. Like, when you come to a new city, you got to find out where you're going to live and how you're going to get to the field. What's your routine? There's a lot of feeling out to be done there. Now, again, 324 for a pitcher, for a starting pitcher, you can't play every day, right? But I think in the times that he went out there, you were just, like, exuding confidence that you were going to get a W.
All right. What else is going on with the roster? Last year, the catcher, Gary Sanchez, kind of just fell off the map.
Awful.
He batted below 200.
Yep. 147, I believe that number was.
In fact, when they signed Cole, they envisioned pairing him with the monster that is Gary Sanchez. By the end of the year, Gerrit Cole's go-to catcher was Kyle
Higashioka.
Right? Yep. That's not the way they drew it up.
Right.
What happened to Gary Sanchez?
I think defensively he was just abysmal on both sides of the ball last year. Right, I think defensively he was having balls just hit him in the chest. It's like, bro, like what are you doing? right? And Cole, not only is he like very maniacal, it seems, about everything in his starts, but also just like the way catchers set up, the way that they receive the ball. Mm-hmm. Are they quiet? Are they able to steal some strikes? Framing. I think that all of that really played in with Higashioka versus Sanchez. But again, Sanchez just wasn't good, bro. Like on the offensive side, just like you were alluding to before, 147 average and just a terrible slugging percentage of 365. Like, bruh, like that's not going to cut it for any team. So he was just not good last year.
Has he picked it up in the spring?
He has. He's got a couple home runs. He's hitting the ball to all fields in the spring, which is nice to see. I think that when he really gets into trouble, this is no secret. He just gets like hella pull happy. And it's like, bro, like not everything you hit or put into play is going to go 480 to left.
Right.
And when he's at his best is when he's shooting those gaps, particularly right center, because his power is legitimately to right center.
Right.
Right. But I think when he gets away from that, then he runs into trouble.
So who's the opening day starting catcher?
It is Gary Sanchez. Honestly, I mean, there's no question about that. But I understand like the root of your question in terms of like, yo, like who's the go-to? It's just funny though, because opening day is almost taken like with a grain of salt sometimes. Or I think it has become more so in the recent years, because it's like opening day, dope. It's 162 game season. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about 2019, Troy Tulowitzki was the opening day shortstop, right? Wow. And DJ LeMahieu was chilling on the bench. Now LeMahieu is the batting champion. So it is funny how that dynamic works. But no, Gary Sanchez, to answer your question. For sure.
So is Gary Sanchez going to be there because you say it's just one of 62, or off of merit, he's earned that position?
He's earned it this spring.
Okay.
For sure. He's earned it this spring, but I think it does check off both of those boxes that you prompted, for sure.
Mm. You mentioned DJ LeMahieu a few times, man. This is, again, I just watching baseball casually, and his name just popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The Yankees just re-signed him. Where did he come from? You know, put his last season with the Yankees in some sort of context for me. And what do you project for the future?
Yeah, no doubt. So LeMahieu came from Colorado. And Colorado, I mean, again, in any sport, like the altitude is different there. Right. So a lot of people think that in conjunction with Coors Field, where the Rockies home field is at, that those numbers were a little bit more inflated.
Yes.
Like, oh, like, you know, that's cap. Like, he's
straight not, cap.
Yeah, right. Like, he ain't all that. but, bro, like, he's won a batting title there, too. He's won gold gloves over there, too. But smaller market, all of that is intertwined and plays a factor into, you know, is he a big name or not. Comes over to New York, two-year deal, and just never stops hitting. Mm-hmm. For real. His nickname is a machine. But he's been the Yankees' best player. Best player because he's been healthy pretty much like 90% of his two-year term this far. And, I mean, this past year, he won the batting title again. A lot of people were like, oh, like it was a shortened season. Mm-hmm. Fam, he was just raking just all year long. So he's been really special.
You said a Yankees best player.
Yeah. He has been because he's been on the field. He's been healthy.
Here at WBH Radio, the Yankees best player is Aaron Judge.
Yeah, you are a Judge Stan, so am I. Okay. However,
so I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to turn my mic off because, as you mentioned, I'm a Stan. Man, it's been a tough go with Aaron Judge. A lot of injuries. They just went through arbitration, so he's here. He's going to be here.
Yep.
What do you do? What do you think? Like,
I mean, listen, like Judge is like probably is makes a strong case for best player on the planet when he's healthy. But last couple seasons, unlucky, he's been hurt a lot. Even when he's been on the field, he's been playing while hurt. Right. And I think that we certainly admire that. But I mean, like he stated earlier this spring, because a lot of people were gassing him up about how quality his at-bats have been this spring. And he goes, yeah, like, it's a lot easier to hit when you don't have a cracked rib. And yikes. I mean, yeah, it's a lot easier to do anything in life when you don't got a cracked rib. You feel me? So, again, like LeMahieu, like I stated before, he's been the best player, not just because he's been the most, he's been more healthy than the Giants of Judge and Giancarlo, for instance. But Judge, I think that it speaks to like them going through the arbitration. You were like, oh, like, what do you do? I think the Yankees are saving for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think, like, a couple of years ago, forgot who it was, that maybe it was a Machado, maybe it was a Harper, that the Yankees were like, yo, throw him that bag, or LeMahieu, like, give him a blank check. Not only did they get LeMahieu for super cheap, and they pass a Machado and Harper in the face of Yankee fandom just being obnoxious and saying, right, good, everybody. Right. But, yo, they got to pay Judge. They got to pay Sanchez. They got to play Gleyber. Like, these are all guys that are still going to get their money too, but Yankees got to save for themselves.
Aaron Judge, would you consider him injury prone? When I think of people that are injury prone, I think of people who suffer soft tissue issues multiple times, muscle strains. Aaron Judge has suffered broken bones. The healthiest person in the world could break a bone.
Facts.
You know, he you mentioned cracked ribs. I remember he broke his wrist one time. Is it time to worry about him maybe being injury prone, or these are just freak accidents and bad luck?
I think a number of them, I think what you stated have definitely been just been like one off and not like freak accident type things. Mm-hmm. Although he has had like oblique strains. He's had, you know, oblique this, oblique that. It's like, yo, like that's pretty, it's become commonplace in baseball the last few years. But I mean, he's talked about how he's taken up yoga and taking care of his body. So, I mean, what professional athlete hasn't said that they've taken up yoga though too? So
the last 2 years, 2019, the Yankees lose to the Houston Astros. Jose Altuve hits a walk-off home run. Last year, they lose to the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays hit a home run to finish the series. Both of those pitches came from?
Aroldis Chapman.
Aroldis Chapman.
Yep.
Somebody I'm quite fond of. Won the World Series with the Chicago Cubs. Throws 101 miles per hour. But the last 2 years, he coughed it up.
You're right. Yeah. So when I was heading into this discussion, I very painfully pulled up those highlights because I was like, yo, like obviously, like it blurs together for me. I remember walking out the bar for the 2019 one, like before the ball even left the bat. Mm-hmm. Like I seen it, and I was just like, yo, I gotta be out. Like I was at the DL, Delancey and Ludlow in Lower East Side, and I was like, yo, I can't do this right now. Anyways.
I mean, baseball happens, Kyle.
It does happen.
Is he regressing, or it's just baseball?
I'd say the latter.
Former is first, latter is. Which one did I say? Second?
Just baseball.
Okay.
Yeah. And I say that because as far as the 2019 series ended, Altuve hit a hanging slider.
Okay.
And like Chappie, like that's not your go-to pitch. Like if you're gonna lose on your best pitch. Like yo, get the money with pitch. Your best. Exactly. Yeah. And then I watched back the Brasseau home run. It happened in the eighth inning against the Rays. It's a 5-game series. I honestly think that if it's a 7-game series and not a divisional round, Yankees probably win it in 7, right? But as far as game 5 went, Chapman threw a fastball, and it was 1-on-1.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like your initial inclination is like, yo, tip your cap. Chapman didn't spot it up either. Sanchez, as I watched it back earlier, really wanted it really, really low and in. He missed by about a foot up. Mm-hmm. Spot where Brasseau was able to come around on. So I say all that to say that I think his worst moments came at really inopportune times for the Yankees. Now, does that mean he's not clutch? Mm-hmm. It might be because he gave up a homer to Rashay Davis against the Indians when he was with the Cubs in 16, and they almost blew that too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think CC Sabathia made a good point of this on his podcast on R2C2.
What did he say?
He goes, yo, if you think about it, Chappie's been asked to do a lot in the playoffs. And again, he's not justifying it, but he was like, yo, he's having Chapman go out and get 2 1/3.
For sure.
7, 8, 9 outs. And it's like, bro, fine, but you haven't asked him to do that all season. All of a sudden, October comes around, and it's like, hey, you got 60 pitches in you, bro? It ain't that easy to just remain that efficient.
For sure. And the Yankees been doing that to him for years. I remember 2017.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't too happy about having to go 2 innings. Closers, they want to come in, get you 3 outs, and they're gone. And as you mentioned, the Chicago Cubs, when he played with them, he helped drag them to the finish line too. So it's been a long couple of years. But is Chappie still special? It seems everybody's throwing 100 miles per hour. I remember being in the Yankee building, and I asked them, like, yo, how long do y'all expect him to be able to perform like this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, well, his average velo, I feel like, has regressed a little bit. Right, but it's going from 106 to 101, mm-hmm. and everyone's throwing 101, 102. So it's like, all right, like, has he really dropped off like that? I don't really think so.
Right.
I think what compounds that, and this is something that you had noted in like the preview to this, was his wipeout slider, but the pitch that, as you stated, that Aaron Boone is really high on, his splitter. I'm a little scared of the splitter, though, because as good as it's looked, it's very easy to leave up. And Tanaka threw a splitter. Tanaka threw a lot of splitters. And he was a fly ball pitcher, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. gave up a lot of homers. Can't have Chapman giving up any more homers in the postseason the way that we just detailed.
This split pitch, Aaron Boone was talking about it. He described it as, quote-unquote, gross.
Yeah.
Right? This is a new pitch for Aroldis Chapman?
It is, yeah, yeah. I think he broke it out maybe like late 2020, but I think that was the extent of it.
Kyle, do we want our closer adding new pitches? Mariano Rivera, you just said if you're going down, go down with your best pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is he adding pitches to his repertoire at this juncture in his career? Mariano Rivera, he was coming to the mound, the 40,000 fans in the stadium, the millions watching at home. We knew what he was coming with.
Yeah, yeah. When Rivera was coming up, we started the car. We were like, start the car. We were so cocky as Yankee fans during that tenure. But no, I think to answer your question as far as like why is he adding stuff to his repertoire, but you have to. Mm-hmm. You have to. You have to be dynamic and adapt to the league. There are scouting reports out on you, and sometimes when your slider ain't there and your fastball and you're not feeling it, mm-hmm. you're not able to throw 101 because it's cold in April or October. You got to be able to change up. Mm-hmm. To be fair, Mariano's like once in a lifetime. So it's like, yeah, you knew what he was coming with, but like who really was touching him? He's a unanimous Hall of Famer. Conversely, though, to probably go against the grain of your point a little bit, Rivera did add a second pitch later in his career, two-seamer, mm-hmm. right, which has the opposite movement of a cutter. So let's say a cutter to a righty is going away from them, two-seamers coming in on their hands. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys were like, yo, it was actually like pretty good.
Right.
But like you said, you can't get beat on anything other than your number one.
All right, Kyle, 2021 season. What are you expecting? You're a Yankee fan, so it's championship or bust for you, no?
Always, always. And like, listen, I feel like the expectation is always championship. It's just it varies how confident we are mm-hmm. in that actually happening. You can't be any more confident than now, right? I think that the biggest hole for the Yankees the last several seasons has been the starting pitching in the postseason. Mm-hmm. It's been okay in games that the offense was struggling, and then mm-hmm. times that the offense was doing great, they were terrible. The pitching was. So it's like, all right, well, we need some consistent, balance here. As far as the expectations, just like you said, it's a World Series, man. They got Cole leading the way. You expect him to win two games a series. That's just off rip. Mm-hmm. Is it a fair expectation? For humans, probably not. But like you said, 324 mil, yo, you better pull up and come correct. And then as far as just health is the biggest thing, man. Health is a big thing, but this is a very deep team, too. This is probably one of the deeper teams that the Yankees have had in the last couple seasons.
Kyle, where did that come from? Yo, we're the Yankees. We win championships. Where did that arrogance come from, or that mantra, that belief, that standard? Why is that in place amongst the Yankees organization and the fan base?
Dynasties, bro. They've had some really sustained success for a long time. And I think that, based on your sigh, I know where we're headed. It's like yesterday's home runs don't win today's mm-hmm. games. It's been a lot of that. I think a lot of us Yankee fans cling on to the past of like, yeah, well, we got 27 rings, bro. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yo, like, it cool. We haven't done anything since 2009. Like, it's been 12 years. It's been more than a decade.
Growing up in New York, watching the Yankees, you know, especially of late, I've been frustrated by that belief and arrogance that, yo, we're the Yankees, we always win championships.
Yep.
I believe that pursuit of a championship every year has actually cost them. Hmm. And I think it all stems from an inflated belief of what their history is. You know, exaggerated to a bit. Hmm. You talk about the 27 championship. 27 championships. The Yankees have 11 championships from 1923 to 1947. All right? If you're doing the math, that's 40% of their championship total.
It was out here, though.
Why did I pick that span? Because Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 1947. Mm-hmm. So those 11 championships, who are they playing against?
Accountants. And plumbers.
Kyle, who are they playing against, right? They're not playing against the black athletes. You know, take the racial context out of it. Mm-hmm. Then they're not playing against the best athletes in the world. But that's in the past. All right, cool. George Steinbrenner buys the Yankees in 1973. Don Mattingly, one of the greatest hitters in Yankee history. He plays from 1982 to 1995. Kyle, he plays in one playoff series. That's not Yankee dominance. That's not Yankees ruling the world. We got to win a championship. So where does this arrogance come from? 1996, they win the World Series, right? This is the beginning of the recent dynasty. 96, they win in 98, they win in 99, they win in 2000. Yep. Four championships in 5 years. That came organically, right? What was the staple of that? Those teams, the core four? People that came through the farm system, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit.
You got to throw Bernie in there too.
Yeah. These are not high-priced free agents from other teams. Yep. This is the Yankee brass going to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and finding some scrawny kid named Derek Jeter, putting him through the system for years. Okay, now he's ready. Laying a foundation. I haven't seen that in the last couple of years, Kyle. We chasing people. Oh, the A's got a first baseman. Let's go get Jason Giambi. Carl Pavano. Let's go buy up all these other teams. Where's the foundation, Kyle?
So you're totally correct.
Okay. Right? One more piece before you go. Yeah, one more go piece. Ahead. 1996. Who was the general manager?
Cash.
I was hoping you said that.
Here we go.
I think Cash's contribution to the Yankees is a bit exaggerated also. 1996, please Google. 1996, the general manager of the New York Yankees was Bob Watson. Mm. The first black general manager to win a World Series. That's the guy that went and got Joe Torre. Joe Torre, who had just been fired twice. Nobody in New York knew why he was being hired here. Is it correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, till 98.
So, that foundation wasn't laid by Cash. To his credit, Cash was assistant GM. He wasn't a nobody. Mm-hmm. But as I look over the last couple of years, and we just trying to buy up the rest of Major League Baseball, that ain't how it goes. And the reason for that is because we got this pressure of, oh, snap, we win champions every year. No, we don't. And when we did have our most success is when we went in the farm, we tightened up, and we went and got some bodies. And I thought they returned to that in 2017. Here we got another group of amazing young athletes that came to the farm system. Aaron Judge, Luis Severino, Gary Sanchez. They had some success, and then they start looking at everybody else's team. Oh, let's go get Giancarlo Stanton. Mm-hmm. When my man Kyle said, it's always been about the arms, okay? It is a travesty that they lost to the Rays in 2020. What's the Yankees' payroll in 2020?
Good question.
$111 million. They lost to the Rays, whose payroll was $28 million. Mm-hmm. So Cash is just some rich kid spending money. He ain't getting it done. All right, my last point, Kyle, I'll hand it to you. If I'm the Yankees brass, I'm going to get somebody from the Tampa Rays organization. I'm going to get somebody from the St. Louis Cardinals organization who is still running a respectable franchise with only a fraction of the money. Hmm. 2009 World Series. The Yankees payroll was $201 million. The next team was the Mets at $135. That was one of the most expensive World Series in history. That's not what you after. That's not the core four, Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Paul O'Neill and Bernie Williams. Kyle. It's inflated. Get back to being in the trenches, building up young athletes, and stop trying to buy up everybody else's. That's not value. Gerrit Cole, we've seen the best of him. He's never going to live up to that contract. That's not what you want, Yankees and Yankee fans. Mr. John Kenai, Bob Watson, I just hit you. Bob Watson, first black general manager to win the World Series. Not Cash. Cash ain't get Torre in here. Cash didn't bring in David Wells. Man. What you got for me,
you
bro?
Straight?
I'm done.
So you're totally correct, right, in terms of this period of time where the Yankees were just blowing a bag every left and right turn that they made in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, even early 2010s of like Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran, just wash dudes. Dudes that are like, yo, like, they're on the shelf. Right.
One piece on Brian McCann. 2017, we're in Houston. The Yankees are in American League Championship round.
17?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's game seven.
The Astros to seven. Yeah, seven games.
It's game seven. I'm out there. My man Fenton is with me. I'm not sure I could say that. I don't think he ever told his girlfriend, but he was out there with me. She I don't think she watches the show.
Gang.
Brian McCann is the catcher for the Astros.
Correct.
Yet, he was still being paid by the Yankees. So, Yankees, you paying this dude to beat you?
Yep.
This is the type of mismanagement that has gone on these last couple of years, Kyle. Sorry.
You're straight. That's how it goes, though. Right? That's how it goes. You're totally correct in terms of the Yankees just way overspending on great examples. Jason Giambi, even overseas guys. Kei Igawa, like some deep cuts here.
Yeah.
I think when you were beginning to say before 2017 about them getting back to that, sure, they've paid Gerrit Cole. That was a two-prong beneficial move. One, getting Gerrit Cole. Two, taking him away from Houston.
Right.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. I think they have gotten back to that, though, in terms of going a little bit more grassroots, because I'm looking at their roster, or at least their projected roster, and a lot of these dudes are coming up, if not through their minor leagues, at least coming to the Yankees at the AA, AAA level,
right,
and then coming in through via call-up, right, rather than via external acquisition. So what I mean by that, Davey Garcia is a guy, Domingo Herman is another, Loaiza, Montgomery, Nick Nelson, mm-hmm. Clark Schmidt. And then even Higashioka, right? He ended up being the postseason starter.
Yes.
Gary Sanchez, Miguel Andujar. Like, these names keep on going. Gleyber Torres acquired via trade, but again, that was when he was in AA.
Yeah.
Yankees clearly saw something there. Luke Voit was acquired from the Cardinals when he was a nobody.
Right.
Tyler Wade is coming up. Clint Frazier, also in the Gleyber deal, or nearby in the Gleyber deal. Gardner, obviously a homegrown guy. Judge. A lot of these names on this roster, you know what I'm saying, have come up through the way that you'd have liked to see it,
yes,
which was through some level of the minor leagues. Even Talkman is on there, too. And then the thing with Stanton, what's unique with that was via trade.
Right.
And if anything, even to this day, Yankees still robbed the Marlins on that trade. Absolutely robbed them. Starling Marte, a couple pitchers, maybe some bread as well. Right. Giancarlo, even as hurt as he's been, like Starling Castro. He was on the way out anyways. Gleyber was coming through. So with all that said, yeah, there were points where the Yankees probably spent more that spent money that they didn't need to, like let's say like those mid-2000s examples. But in the last 4 or 5 years, Cashman has made it very clear. He's like, yo, I'm not going to pay a Yankees tax. And I thought that that was such an intriguing term to use. Mm-hmm. He goes, when it came to LeMayu, he was like, I'm not going to let all these other teams just post these fake bids of like, yeah, the Blue Jays are rumored to offer DJ 590. Cash is like, bro, like, I'm not going to pay a Yankees tax. Like, right. I'm not going to outpay myself on just based on rumored reports just because we're the Yankees and just because we can't afford it.
Right.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think he's actually adopted that mindset over the last couple of years.
Why does a Tampa Bay Rays team with a fraction of the payroll beat the Yankees?
I think that they have very strong analytics teams, and that's not the be-all, end-all, but they're also very well-managed, too. Not to say that Boone is a bad manager, but Kevin Cash, he's been doing his thing with a bunch of guys that are, like, very mid-level at best.
Kevin Cash is the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think those two have a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's just, like, yo, who can perform in the clutch straight up? I think Chapman has proven that he cannot, right? And he's blown the last two series, season-ending series on that. Three out of the last four if you want to extrapolate, too. So, I think that the clutch gene is important there as well.
We're going to talk about clutch in a second. Also, when I talk about acquiring everybody else's talent, I forgot to mention Yankees giving up on some of their own talent prematurely.
Hmm.
One of my favorite players and people I got to meet while I was with the Yankees was Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
Sonny Gray had a rough 2 years with the Yankees. He goes somewhere else and he's an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up on him too early.
So, and that is a potential claim to be made, but at the same time, it's like, well, what if New York wasn't the spot for him? Big market. Like, yo, what if he can't perform in that? He had a great game two of like the 2017
right.
CS or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yo, like, maybe there's a reason why he was good in Oakland, not good in New York, but good in Cincinnati. Some of these dudes just ain't cut out for New York.
And you know what, Kyle? I have nothing to the contrary to say that you could be wrong.
Yeah.
But as somebody that got to interact with him, that boy ain't scared. But the evidence point to maybe the Big Apple wasn't for him. As you mentioned, he was a dog in Oakland.
Yes.
Come here, he struggles a bit, goes to the Cincinnati Reds, becoming an all-star again. Mm-hmm. I think he ain't get the run support while he's here.
You're right.
But that boy tough to me. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's just whatever, it didn't work out. But I want to talk about Clutch Gene.
Yeah.
And being inside the building, I hope I'm not even betraying anybody's trust. The Yankee environment is not producing tough individuals, right? And I blame the Yankee management for that. You're supposed to create an environment where people become the best version of themselves. You know, CC Sabathia is a dog, but he just was built that way. Aaron Judge, a dog. They came from where they came from like that. Brett Gardner, too. But the Yankees ain't really churning anybody out, right? What's the culture like? Being inside, I feel like they coddle these folks. Mm. They protect them because they feel they have to show, oh, the Yankee way, we take care of our athletes. That's cool. But you can't coddle them all year and then throw them in Fenway in the middle of October and expect them to be tough.
So two questions for you there, then, mm-hmm. to your point. One, what does that coddling look like? And then two, how do they bred this toughness like that you're desiring?
The New England Patriots, when people go in there, they come out dogs. Whether they're a star or they're a mid-level person like Malcolm Butler. Like, we ain't know his name, but he had the testicular fortitude to make that big of a play in the Super Bowl. That's a culture, right? Mm. You ask me, coddling. Damn, should I even say that? There are players who don't perform, and they get to walk around that organization like they doing something. Like, the support staff, we got to tiptoe around them. Mm. You can't let that person know he's not performing. Yo, dog, you ain't getting it done. You see, what happens is a lot of people come in that organization and they want to take advantage of what it is to be a Yankee. They siphoning off of the Yankee history. But you can't forget to do your part to build it. Aaron Judge knows that, yo, I'm a Yankee, it's cool. I'm the talk of the town, but I got to take it to the next level too. So when you ask what do they don't do, I think they got too many privileges. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't even want to know the hoops we was jumping through for summer. I'm like, for this guy? Yeah. He ain't performing. And what was the other question you asked me?
Yeah, no, those were the two. It was, what does the coddling look like? And then how can they actually bred them to be tough?
You could create an environment of toughness, an environment of truth. People say, like I say, New England Patriots, Bill Belichick going to give it to you how it is. You shouldn't be able to bat 197 and still walk around the Yankee clubhouse like you running things. Okay? And I'll say this last piece. You talked about Masahiro Tanaka.
Yeah.
Where is he at right now?
He is in Japan.
He went to Japan.
Yep.
He's from Japan, right?
Yes, he's pitching for the Ruckus and Golden Eagles.
So he played for the Yankees for a number of years. A deal didn't work out with the Yankees. And instead of exploring free agency here in Major League Baseball, he decides to go home. You don't have a problem with that? If it ain't the Yankees and I'm taking my ball and going home. Dude, that sound like a dog. Don't you got something to prove here? Don't you want to continue to pursue a World Series? Nah, if it's not the Yankees, if it ain't mama's cooking, I'm out.
Good question. Listen.
And I watched that and I'm like, dang, everybody probably don't know what's really taking place here. Hold on, you mean I can't fly on a Yankee private jet? I can't stay in a top hotel with the Yankees? Man, F this.
I think that, if anything, it indicated him truly just...
Don't say bleeding Yankee, Kyle.
No. Never that. I think it was just him like, yo, like, I'm truly in the driver's seat here. And he was like, I'm going to call the shots about how I want this to go. Mm-hmm. I don't think it had as much to do with the amenities that the Yankees offered so much as it was, bro, if I'm not going to just play in the majors just to play in the majors. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go where I'm going to be happy. One, I'm happy that he's not pitching for like the Blue Jays, shoving against the Yankees in October. Two, you got to be happy for a guy because he's back home. And three, there is a prospect that he comes back to New York in 2022.
Okay.
Possible. Not off the table.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I think that just from the top down, there has to be an environment of toughness, you know. Sometimes players come in there with all type of issues and guys jump through hoops. Sometimes you got to stand up, yo, you got to fix it. You know, I'm talking about personal life. Like, yo, I got a speeding ticket. Can you make it disappear? No, you were speeding. Pay your ticket. You can't put that person in the middle of Fenway in October and they going to ball out. You coddling these kids and expect them to go on the field and perform. Speaking of organizations, though, Colin Cowherd, he always talks about second-generation businesses and how they don't do as well because the second-generation kid who takes over for their parent might be a trust funder, silver spoon in their mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't know what it is to lace up their boots. They don't have the gumption to build a business, right? And right now, the Yankees are being led by one of the Steinbrenner's offsprings. I forget if it's Hank or Hal. They're not the boss. They didn't build the net worth. They just doing their best to maintain it. And I think that cannot be understated is why the Yankees are not maybe where they were in 96. Because these people are just trying to hold on maybe to how dad would have did it. But dad did it 20 years ago. Life has changed. Who knows what innovative things dad would have done to this point. Okay, so I look at the Yankee organization, I think they're a step behind.
I don't think, and this is not to undermine what George Steinbrenner was mm-hmm. able to accomplish. This is not to cape or make excuses for what the Steinbrenner children have not been able to accomplish. I think there's a whole lot smaller of a gap between like the large, quote unquote, larger market teams now mm-hmm. and the smaller market teams now compared to in the past, mm-hmm. right? So like you mentioned, like, yo, 20, 25 years, think that there's a whole lot more from a marketing side that has allowed for the game to be a whole lot more interconnected, which has allowed for greater exposure for these athletes that maybe instead of only going to bigger markets, that they will go to a Tampa.
For
they
sure.
will go to a smaller, like a Colorado, for instance. And it's made it, I'm not going to say more difficult mm-hmm. to win a World Series, but at least accruing the talent, that part is difficult now, I think, more so mm-hmm. than in the past.
And the Yankee organization and their fan base, they need to be on notice. The New York Mets just got a new owner.
Yep.
Steve Cohen, mm-hmm. $14 billion net worth, self-made. Like, that type of dude got an edge over the Steinbrenner offspring, I believe. He got the fearlessness, the gumption to build a business. You never know what he's after and what he's capable of. All right, so the Yankees need to be on notice. They already acquired Francisco Lindor from the Cleveland Indians.
Yep.
He brought back Sandy Alderson, who was in place in the Mets organization when they've had some success. Yo, it's about to be a battle. About to be a battle.
Nah, for sure. When the Mets picked up Lindor, I was sick. I ain't gonna hold you. Yo, that's kind of fire.
Yeah.
But they're doing good things over there, man. He's not afraid to spend. He's not afraid to interact with the fans mm-hmm. In ways that a lot of owners and just overall front office leadership is afraid mm-hmm. to. And they should be hype. I think the Mets fans are. And I think they're doing the right things. They're moving in the right direction.
Got you. Kyle, give me your last piece on the Yankees, man. And we're going to move on.
Last piece on the Yankees, man. Listen, I was looking at my dad the other day. Just no context. We were just sitting in silence. I said, Yankees got to win a World Series, man.
Yankees got to win
a World Series. It's been too damn long, for real. Yo, all the pieces are there. It's just a matter of health. Health, health, health.
All the pieces are there.
Yep.
Got it. Oh, you talked about Coughlin again. Gary Sanchez underperformed. They ain't say nothing about him. Phil Jackson, he used to take shots at the great Michael Jordan in the press. The great Kobe Bean Bryant. But Gary Sanchez struggled. The Yankees, we're working on it. Going to the media, no, he needs to be better. He needs to be in better shape. That's not the standard they're holding him to. Couple other things in baseball. What I got here? Fernando Tatis Jr. signs a 14-year contract for $340 million with the Padres. Now, there was an article that came out that says when he was in the minor leagues, he signed for a loan from a company called Big League Advance. For every $50,000 they loan you, they get 1% of your future earnings. So he took the maximum of $500,000. So they are entitled to 10% of his future earnings. So that contract, they're going to get $34 million off of it. Yep. Off of a $500,000 loan. What do you think of that?
Yeah, so Tatis is a Scott Boras guy, right? I took a look at that before coming through. And I pulled up my phone because I asked one of my boys. I was like, yo, like, you guys hear anything about this Tatis thing? Like, I didn't hear anything about it till one of my boys, I'm hopping on his pod later, he had it on one of the discussion points. Mm-hmm. And he's a brilliant mind, my boy Michael. He's actually an actuarial scientist.
Oh, wow.
I know, out here. And so I said, yo, you guys know anything about this? He goes, yeah, it's a new deal that I know Andrew Heaney has also done. This is a very, Heaney is like a very, like, very average starting pitcher, like average at best. He goes, you get paid a sum in return for a percentage of future earnings, just like you stated. He goes, Tatis did it when he was younger. So it was like, let me basically be rich no matter what, just in case baseball doesn't work out. Right. And then he goes on to say, clearly he's a star. He's going to lose out on a lot of money, but it does make sense for fringe guys or always injured guys, right, like in Andrew Heaney. So, again, you did a great job of just contextualizing it. But I don't know. I think it's an interesting one, right? Because when you're coming up without a whole lot financially, right, when you have that opportunity, it's like, yo, like, I could set my family straight right now. But right, at the same time, it's like, well, to what extent are you trying to bet on yourself, right, too? But sometimes, even if you bet on yourself, the numbers ain't adding up.
Now, Fernando Tatis says he took that loan when he was in the minors, $500,000, because he wanted to hire a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. He wanted to eat better. He wanted to get a better apartment. He wanted to really make a push to make the major leagues. Yeah. I got no problem with that. You know, and as you mentioned, people who come from tough areas who don't have the means and who really want to make a push to major league, like, it costs. So I understand them taking that loan. My issue with this story and this player specifically is his name is Fernando Tatis Jr., the offspring of a former major leaguer. His dad, Fernando Tatis, somebody who made $18 million playing the game, who last played in 2010. You mean to tell me you ain't had a means to hook your son up or put him in position to give him the best shot at going to the major leagues? He had to take a predatory loan from some company? Kyle, what are we doing as athletes? If you playing baseball day in, day out, summers for years upon years, he played 13 years for your progeny to be at ground zero. Kyle, I've been disillusioned with the sports lately, and people always say, yo, well, it's about the bag, it's about the bag. His daddy got the bag. Right. And I looked at it. You know what? Maybe they had a tough relationship growing up. Nah. When Fernando Tatis Jr. had his first hit in the league, he's like, yo, so happy that my dad is here. Da-da-da-da-da. You had to take a predatory loan, $500,000 for $34 million trade-off? Come on, man. What we doing in the sports, Kyle?
You're right.
What we doing?
You're right.
What's the point of the money if we're going to squander it and we back at ground zero?
Go fumble the bag. Nah, listen, you ask a good question, bro. It's like, yo, dad, like, you got 500, like, for not 10% of my contract?
Jesus.
But no, God. I mean, listen, you raise a good point. It's like you really question, if not his dad, like, the family dynamic there. Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tatis, again, this is not to, like, make excuses or try to get in his head. But it's like, were you trying to do it on your own? Mm-hmm. If so, kind of financially irresponsible. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There must be more to it.
And I don't even think it's a family dynamic. I think it's just our athletes are not handling business.
Yeah.
There's not enough of an emphasis on that as well. 500 grand for, he could have said, yo, dad, write up a contract, 500 grand for 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 5 million, 15 million, not 34.
Yeah. I definitely question his, like, the lack of, like, support he got in that regard. But at the same time, hindsight is 20/20. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, we didn't know that.
That's crazy.
Was gonna get.
That's crazy. His dad is a assistant coach of the Mets organization right now. Like, God damn, you couldn't get him a trainer. God
damn.
For real. Big league advance is somewhere popping champagne. We just got $34 million.
I know.
Speaking of the bag, LeBron James just became a part owner in the Red Sox. Yep. Kyle, what you got?
It's pretty cool, man. I ain't going to lie. It's pretty cool to see him. I mean, yo, I was looking at this earlier. He's also got his hand involved not only in the Red Sox, but also with a couple other organizations as well in different sports. Mm-hmm. They're building something special over there in terms of the agency. I'm especially excited, honestly, like just based on my college experience, like having been in Massachusetts for 4 years for undergrad and then another 2 years after that,
mm-hmm.
To have it be at Fenway Sports Group, for real. I mean, obviously, as we know, and you kind of delved into it a little bit earlier, like Boston is an historically extremely racist area,
mm-hmm.
right, or city for that matter. So I think, or at least I hope that LeBron is able to, with his leadership and his group there, kind of turn the tide a little bit. Tall order, though.
So you like the move? You think it's a big deal?
Big deal?
It's impressive.
It's pretty dope. I ain't gonna lie. It's pretty dope.
So, quick story. The other day, my dad jumps in my YouTube comments. All right. Now, Kyle doesn't know me long enough to know how crazy it is what I just said to him. That my dad jumped in my YouTube comments, right? I wonder how people who've known me for 25 years, like Fant, my man K-Mac, my homie Nicole, I wonder how they experienced that news. Hey, Dad, by the way. But he jumped in my YouTube comments and he said, yo, doing a good job, son, but I need you to lay off LeBron. You know what I mean? LeBron's a businessman. He's doing for his community. So.
Interesting.
I can't speak on LeBron, right? But let's talk about this. The NBA and their athletes, is it safe to say that they weren't too fond of the president, Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The NBA players are the standard. They mm-hmm. are the pulse of a lot of just the athletic community overall. Now, this is definitely right there with the WNBA as well,
mm-hmm.
Whose voices aren't magnified nearly enough, yet bringing that same energy as the NBA players do. Different conversation. But yeah, the NBA players, they pretty much dictate the pulse of a lot of the major sports as a ripple effect.
And the NBA players, like the champions, they wouldn't visit the White House when Donald Trump mm-hmm. was in office.
Yeah, it's taking a stand right there.
And I know a lot of people celebrated when Donald Trump wasn't in office. I mean, when Biden got elected. In fact, I was in the street riding my bicycle.
Was lit. New York was active.
It was a party.
New York was active, yeah.
A party. People out there celebrating like Donald Trump is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, hold up. 75 million people voted for Donald Trump.
Yes, sir.
So if you think Donald Trump is a racist, a homophobe, a sexist, a xenophobe, if he incited sedition... What if some of his followers are like that?
100%.
And I'm not going to say all 75 million people just because they voted for him are racist or bigot. But let's say 90% is.
Even regardless of trying to assign percentages, they just decided 100% of those people decided that none of those entities that you labeled were a deal breaker.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, that's fine.
So let's say there are people out there that have the same policies, politics, feelings,
right?
As Donald Trump, where are they? Are they living underground or are they out here walking amongst us, right? And if you look at these polls and stuff, they come from certain demographics,
mm-hmm.
probably a male, a white male,
yep.
certain tax brackets.
Yep, certain flags on certain cars.
So when LeBron James makes this deal and they pop in champagne, is it possible that some of those individuals were in the room with him, capitalizing off this deal as well?
Certainly possible.
When he pulled out the cigars, you know, he probably smoked the finest too, the Cohibas, straight out of Castro's collection. Is it likely that they were in that room with him?
Very possible.
So this is what we're supposed to celebrate? You know, people, how are you going to advance when the person you hold in high regard is helping align the pockets of the other side? Mm-hmm. LeBron James, King James Almighty, you could have did business anywhere in the globe. You had to go there. You had to do it there.
You're talking about Boston specific.
I'm talking about it, with that ilk. Mm. Right? We talk about that demographic. It's possible. The numbers, it's possible that the people that don't like your people was in that room are set to benefit from you being in a position, signing contracts, and being a part of that leadership group. Did you vet everybody? So I can't get behind and celebrate that move. You don't know who's in that room. Now, Boston specific. 2017, I told you that I worked with the New York Yankees. It was an amazing time. Charter jets, fancy hotels, running around, watching baseball every day. 2017, I started with them in January. You know, I spent a lot of time with my supervisor. He was what you call a traveling secretary. He mm-hmm. was responsible for moving the team in and out of different cities. And we had a great relationship, just good old time, enjoying baseball, innocent. Fast forward to, I think it's maybe May, because the Boston Celtics were in the playoffs. And we're going on our first trip to Boston. Again, all we've ever discussed is baseball, just regular stuff. And one day he turns to me unprovoked as we're going into Boston, unprovoked. Will, be careful. Now, I knew what he was getting at. You know, what you mean? So, Will, Boston is one of the most racist towns out there. Mm-hmm. When you walk out that hotel, be careful. Be vigilant.
Yep.
I said, damn, even the white boys know how crazy this town is. In fact, the Boston Red Sox themselves released a statement last year after Torrey Hunter talked about playing as an opponent in Fenway Park and hearing racist remarks. The Boston Red Sox acknowledged, yeah, man, we're guilty. It's real in here.
Adam Jones, too, has also, yeah.
So,
CC, of course.
King James, all the might and power and influence you had, that's where you had to go do business. I can't celebrate that, Kyle.
Totally fair. Now, so you question, like, that's where you had to go. Maybe that's where he should have gone. Right? Just go straight to the source, straight for the jugular. Mm-hmm. Why bother with a St. Louis or I don't know who else, like some of these like Midwestern teams? I think it was I feel like his team is more calculated than not, right? LeBron, Mav Carter.
Can I stop you, Kyle? Come on. Y'all giving him too much credit. He's been in the league for 20 years, okay? Donald Sterling was exposed. Do you think he's the only one up there? Bad enough, we know there are people that are capitalizing off of your work in the NBA. Bad enough, there are bad people making money off of your back. When you left Cleveland, Dan Gilbert, owner for the Cavaliers, yep. wrote a runaway slave letter.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Brian, we don't fault you. We gotta make money. That's where you make money. Now, when you have a choice, this is where you end up. Dog, you could press a button on so many different businesses in so many different areas, but they seeking approval from the other side, the opposition. It had me thinking of a book called Animal Farm. You ever heard of that book? Huh?
I think so.
You think so? Animal Farm by George Orwell. So it's about these animals, they're growing up on a farm. There's some humans that treat them bad, poorly, you know, piss poor conditions. So the animals decide to revolt. You know, they come together, they organize, and they overthrow the humans. You know, when they were going through their battle, they had a saying, four legs good, two legs bad. Like, that was their mantra. So they finally take over. And then there's a pig named Napoleon. He's the leader. By the end of the book, he's walking upright, standing on two legs like a human. He's no different. He's abusive. He's drinking alcohol with the humans, right? He claimed to be of the people, of the animals, but when he got the power, he walking upright just like the humans. And he changed the slogan from four legs good, two legs better. So LeBron, like, what side you on? You know what I'm saying?
That's what you're fearful of undertaking.
He already is taking his power and his money, his influence over there. You a hamster in a wheel. LeBron James may be worth a billion. So is Michael Jordan. Phil Knight is worth $43 billion. 43 of y'all. LeBron James might have made $300 million in the NBA. The value of these franchises have grown exponentially. So all 30 of the owners, their net worth have grown 10 times as much. So your $300 million is dwarfed. So people always talk about, yo, it's about money. It's about the right type of money, the right type of economics. How much ground are you making if you're empowering the system and the other side? I liken it to a hamster and a wheel. It's got to be the right economics. It's got to be about putting the right people in position, being able to make decisions, having access to resources. Just a figurehead position to get a percentage from the gross. That ain't it. You can't press no buttons. You're not wrestling any power from them and handing it back to the people. You're walking on two legs.
Let me ask you this. Let's say Bron comes out and expresses like, yo, trying to become a part owner, small portion of a baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a team you'd have liked to see him go to? And this is being realistic, mm-hmm. right? Like the Yankees, obviously off the table. Dodgers, obviously off the table, just way too expensive. Was there a team that you probably would have rather seen him done than Boston? Or is your answer, honestly, any other team besides Boston that is reasonable?
Ideally, I would like to see him not join that ownership group. Boston, or any of those teams, any one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the system you claim to be fighting. They make money off your back. They take that money. They fund the campaign of politicians who appoint police chiefs that allow police officers to go in your community and ravage and beat and rape and murder and maim your people.
Mm-hmm.
You are feeding the system. The fact that we know LeBron James is the system working to a T. You're a product of that. But again, I don't blame you because you got to make your money. Now, when you have that power and that money, what do you do with it? How do you give it back to the people? Ali did. LeBron James had the nerve to come to a press conference with Malcolm X's book. What do you think Malcolm X would feel about him doing business in that arena? Come on, son. And they keep trying to convince me it's about dollars. It's not. It's about resources. It's about being in position to make decisions. Man.
How about his school?
Go for it, Kyle. How about improving health?
I'm saying his I Promise school.
His I Promise school has Nike sneakers on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. The same sneakers kids be dying. I don't know, Kyle. I'll give you the school if you want.
Thank you. It's not even that, but listen, like I hear where you're coming from. I understand
sneakers,
where you're
headed. Sneakers on a wall? Nike sneakers. There's a Nike monument.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Nah, bro. Yeah, nah, bro. Like, LeBron James been in the league for 20 years. What happened? What changes? Whatever y'all fighting for, y'all talking about, oh, Breonna Taylor's killer. Like, mm-hmm. what impact y'all made? I see Muhammad Ali change the narrative on Islam in this country.
Mm-hmm.
He pissed a lot of people off along the way. All right? I ain't seen these folk make no impact. I can't celebrate that. What's it really accomplishing? You ain't wrestled no power back.
Maybe it might be too soon to be able to tell if progress has been made on that yet, though. right? Because you look at some of the WNBA examples, and I forget the specific politician that several, in fact, probably the entire
Kyle Heen impacted his own league.
But what I'm saying is
that— how many black coaches, how many black general managers they got in the NBA?
Very few.
And you was there 20 years. You the king over there. And even his desire to be an owner, you want to sit at the ownership table, the table that tried to keep Carmelo out? Mm-hmm. You want to sit at the same table that's going to end your basketball career one day? Because Michael Jordan got fired by the Washington Wizards. After he finished playing and they made all that money as a Washington Wizards player, he came back and said, I'm ready to be the president. They said, nah, man, you done. This is the group you want to be with? Why they can't build their own league, Kyle? It was built by men. They don't want to do the work. They love the admiration and appreciation from the other side. Mm. Well, if you are on a crusade and your opposition is comfortable with your presence, how fierce of a competitor or foe are you? When Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks skipped out on a game, that was real. Who'd the NBA turn to fix it? LeBron. What side you on?
You make a solid argument, just like, yo, he's been in the league for 20 years. What has he done in terms of just impacting the league, mm-hmm. in terms of uplifting those that are from the communities like yours, right? So the point I wanted to come to before, let's say, regarding the WNBA, and I think just the bubbles overall, right? The WNBA and the NBA bubbles.
Right.
Without attributing too much credit to these leagues as far as getting young sports fans like me, and our age group to get out and vote for local elections, or for the first time for that matter. I think that has had a large impact. Now, again, this probably veers a little bit away from LeBron, but it really just speaks to the more than an athlete, you know, type of mantra, campaign, and slogan that he's really adopted over the last couple of years. And so when you ask, like, yo, like, what has he done to change things? Still might honestly be... Mm-hmm. The same way it is for the NBA, WNBA, and a lot more of these other major sports leagues, to be determined. Because I think that the bubble, and like this past summer, was a major pivoting point for the directions that we're going to be headed in, which is hopefully different than the last 20 years that you just detailed.
Kyle, I've been in them books, man. I've been in them books. There's actually a poster behind you, $40 Million Slaves by William C. Roden. And it was in that book that I first learned about Jackie Robinson's impact joining Major League Baseball. Do you know what it did to the Negro Leagues? The Negro Leagues was black players, black managers, black general managers, black people selling the popcorn, black media. There was a whole infrastructure that got annihilated. Because Jackie Robinson, the MLB start plucking their best players.
Yes, Latinx community as well. Yep, totally right.
A whole economic infrastructure gone. Why they can't put something like that in place again? Right? Why is that not on their radar? These boys is $300 million up. How much it costs to start a business? To start something? You know... A couple years ago, Steph Curry said, yo, because the CEO of Under Armour was a Donald Trump supporter, and Steph Curry's like, yo, I'm going to have to talk to him about that. What the hell are you going to talk to him about? Mm-hmm. He making money off your back and sending it to Donald Trump. How about you and your cronies create your own sneaker? You can have the brand, there's the LeBron version, the Steph Curry version, the Antetokounmpo version. Why they won't do that, Kyle? Because they scared. They don't want to do the work. We've been brainwashed that the other side is better. Their approval means so much. You got the know-how now. You got the education and the finances to build your own world. Why are you still seeking approval from the other side? And that's how they keep the power over you.
Yes.
They don't care how much money they throw at you as long as they still get to call the shots.
Is there a dollar value or even moral amount that you can place on the potential for integration there, though? And what I mean by that is, you raise a valid point. Yeah, like maybe you know, these athletes are seeking and hoping for the validation of, you know, the white corporation order, the white population, right, that holds these super high leadership positions. But what if you're able to have a black, Asian, and white trio of 13-year-olds all wearing Curry's?
Okay.
And that being a mutuality rather than, oh, he's wearing that own sneaker, he's wearing this own sneaker, we ain't on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Wearing a jersey, okay. Cop. Being in the building, can you call shots? That's all I'm asking. Can you call shots? There's no value you can put on that. No dollar amount. Mm-hmm. If ESPN came and got me right now, I'd be like, all right, cool. Can I bring Kyle John Kenai on? Well, what's his resume? What's he done? But here at WBH Radio, Kyle, pull up. That's priceless. You know what I'm saying?
Is that unreasonable for them to ask, though, for more on me?
Yeah.
Or should they? So.
Oh, is it unreasonable?
Or should they just take your word for it, just based on if they hired you and you think that I'm valid?
But if it's mine, it's mine. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, who are these people?
Copy.
And why would you allow them to have that influence over you? Why do we continue in 2021? That's crazy. Kyrie Irving said, yo, I want to create my own league. It was the players that laughing at him. That was most alarming. Mm-hmm. LaVar Ball said, we're going to do our own sneaker. It was the minority community laughing at him. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, hold on. Both can't be true. You can't believe the system is messed up and then you don't want to do your own thing.
Right.
Like, I sit and laugh every offseason with the NFL. We need more black coaches. Well, what number would make you happy? Hmm? Shit, if I own a team, I put who I want in it, in place. Why y'all want to build? So, that's my two cents, man. And it's frustrating. And people going to celebrate LeBron. What are we celebrating? More oppression? They going to put LeBron right behind home plate. And the Negroes going to line up. And in fact, when we hear some racist stuff come out of Boston, Negroes not going to be able to speak because they don't want to go against LeBron. No different when Obama was in office. If he made a misstep, black folk had to zip their lips. That ain't what you want, man. Let me move on. My dad told me I wasn't supposed to talk about LeBron. I ended up saying his name a few times. But yo, let me say this. I was watching HBO Real Sports. I like that show. You know, they do a lot of cool stories. And they had a story on the first and only Major League Baseball player to have taken a knee during an anthem. And his name was Bruce Maxwell.
Yes, sir.
And they're going through, you know, these stories. They do pictures. They showing him as a little leaguer. They showing him here and there. And then came a picture of him in a Team Germany World Baseball Classic jersey. Now, the World Baseball Classic has been going on for years. So I thought maybe it could be from a few years past. But I hit Kyle up and I asked him, like, yo, is this a name you familiar with? Or maybe you saw him from a few years ago. He said, well, am I familiar with him? He was getting ready to play in a tournament with us.
That's my guy.
In fact, I had him on my podcast.
Yep.
So, Kyle, tell me what you got going over there with your multimedia company and the things that you're doing. What you got popping?
Yeah, so KD Multimedia, it's a sports storytelling platform. Mm-hmm. Right, and I think it was a little bit of a snake's route for me to get to that very succinct sentence right there. Because when I first launched it, I spent a lot of time during our shutdown just thinking about my path, right? And I think I remember sending you a super like long message about this, just detailing that journey. Mm-hmm. When we were shut down, I was thinking just in reverse order of my accomplishments because I'm very proud of them, but I also am not one to forget about where you come from, who helped you along the way. Right. And so I think that a big thing for me was like, okay, well, I was able to get this job opportunity because I had a connection from this college, and I didn't get into this college if it weren't for this scholarship. Mm-hmm. This scholarship wasn't even on my mind if I wasn't trying to play baseball as a walk-on, as mm-hmm. we mentioned at the very top of the show. And when I was thinking about in that moment, right, putting myself back in those shoes, those 17-year-old shoes of mine, I was like, all right, well, a big thing for me at that time was wanting to play baseball at the collegiate level. I never got recruited, not for a lack of not being good enough, not for a lack of talent.
Right.
Resources was a big thing for me. Right. So we talked about money before with Tatis. This weaves in so nicely. My parents were not going to drop two G's for me to go to baseball factory tournament this or perfect game showcase that. For you to potentially not even get exposure to some of these college scouts. Conversely, I was like, all right, well, you know, if only I had video at the time, if only I had somebody that could edit video so that I can send video of me, you know, playing, and then hopefully I could blast email it out to a bunch of college programs to try in an effort to get recruited. So then that's where this launched, right? Sports video highlights. And in fact, this is the original card where it says sports video highlights. But I know that as soon as these are done, when I create the next one, it's just going to say telling stories through sport.
Right.
Right. Because that so much more appropriately describes what it is. So to bring it back to what it was with Bruce, where our mutuality is.
Right.
You know, we met at the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, it's funny. He's a Division III guy just like us.
Word.
We had a long conversation about that. And, I mean, yo, we've just been friends since. He's currently in the Mets organization, and it was a big deal for him in July 2020 to get signed with the Mets because now it's his first time back with the Major League club. It's been met, like, with a little bit of a polarizing lens in terms of, all right, well, are y'all just signing him just because it's cool to kneel for the knee for right. for the anthem now?
Right.
Or do y'all actually see something in him, the ball player?
Right.
I'm hoping that it's the latter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the former has something to do with it too, as far as not just a reflection of the Mets' integrity, but just the landscape of sports overall and its attitude toward not being afraid to speak out against right. these issues. So yeah, I mean, that's where KD Multimedia really started. That's the relationship with Bruce. So
it's and y'all did a podcast, right?
Yeah. We've done a few, bro. We've done a few. The first one that I did with him was actually in three parts because it was very extensive in length.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we talked about a number of the mental health was one of them. We talked about kneeling, but really just like what came thereafter in right. terms of what was going on for him, like between the ears. Because between the lines, there was no activity for him, at mm-hmm. least not in America. He ended up going to Mexico, where he was so widely just appreciated and welcomed in, which really speaks a lot to their culture and how much American culture has to improve in that regard. And then the more recent one that I had him on was the first weekend of February.
Okay.
And in February, I remember we had talked about it. It was about sharing black stories. So something I wanted to do for February was amplify black voices by sharing black stories. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? So I brought on exclusively black guests during that month. And for each time one of those posts were shared, I would donate a dollar to two organizations. One, All-Star Advocacy, and two, the Jackie Robinson Foundation. Mm-hmm. So All-Star Advocacy is actually one that Bruce works super closely with. He's an advocate for. And really their whole mantra is just empowering athletes to advocate for change. So they empower athletes to organize, mobilize, and really just champion their communities in order to make lasting change and combat racial injustice. And then the Jackie Robinson Foundation, they have a number of scholarships that, I mean, very self-explanatory from that regard. So, I mean, Bruce was great. He came on most recently again for me first weekend of February. And we just talked about what it was like to grow up in Alabama as a black man.
That's dope, man. Mm-hmm. That's dope. You still playing these days?
I am, yeah. I'm playing in a number of leagues, bro. One of them is Central Park. It's a men's baseball league. The other you actually might be familiar with, Parade Grounds, Prospect Park.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a weeknight league there and a weekend as well. So we're going to be there under the lights.
That's like Caton Street?
Yeah. Right between that and what's the other one? I forget what it is.
I might have to pull up.
Yes, sir.
I might have Please to pull do. Up, man.
Please do. Prospect Park.
I appreciate you coming out, man. Get some shout-outs.
Man. Honestly, bro, I just appreciate you having me on. I'm not one to give too many shout-outs on these types of forums just because it's not that I don't want to utilize the platform. It's just that I'm a big believer in giving people their flowers even when you're not prompted to.
Right.
So I say that to say, like, yo, like, the people that know I got love for them, know.
They know.
Yeah, they know already. But yo, this was dope, bro. I enjoyed it. I think that there was more that we discussed that I anticipated,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoy that because we were able to delve into a lot more topics than just
right.
what happens in between the lines. So thank you again, bro.
Oh, of course, man. Of course. What did I want to say? you know, we joke about the World Baseball Classic mm-hmm. and it being canceled on us. But yo, March 12th, 2020, it was crazy, son.
High key.
We had people from all over the world. Brazil, Germany, yeah. South Africa. We didn't know what was going on. We had a late meeting. They said, yo, it's over. Get all these people back home. We was on the phone 2, 3, 4 in the morning calling airlines trying to get seats.
Oh, my God. I didn't sleep that night. For real. I finished at 5. I was like, what am I going to sleep for?
Yeah. Yeah.
Next flight is at 7.
Now, I'm a combat veteran. So when it got crazy, I actually perked up. Like, all right, the war's coming.
Yep. Yep, I remember.
I kind of perked up. But I was impressed how you young people handle your business, son. You know what I'm saying? I was thoroughly impressed. And Mr. and Mrs. John Kenai, like, your young boy acquitted himself quite well. They handle business, man. You, Aisha, Alberto, we got it done. Mm-hmm. We got home. We ain't know what was happening. And you got to remember, everything is on the news. Our families are calling us, too.
Facts.
Like, yo, we got to handle these people first, man. We don't know what's going to happen, but duty calls, man. So I definitely want to send you a salute on that. As you talk about or as you look forward to the next stage in your career, you know, I've had some jobs in sports. With the New York Rangers, I started out. Then I went with the Yankees. I've coached at my alma mater, Brooklyn mm-hmm. College. Mm-hmm. I'm now working as an adjunct professor at Farmingdale. I'm starting to round out exactly what I want to do. You know I want to work with young athletes and help them maximize their potential both on and off the field of play. So, Kyle, as you look to the next chapter of your career, you know, you've worked in tennis. You have your World Baseball Classic experience. When you look at exactly what you want to do and the path you want to take, what's it look like?
I think it looks a whole lot like storytelling. Storytelling, athlete storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think I always really appreciated what the Players Tribune launched back in 2014. I'm sure you're familiar mm-hmm. with what it is that they do and just providing a voice for the athlete themselves. I think that for me, it would probably be a lot more focused on amplifying the voice unheard, mm-hmm. whether that be a product of their race or their background, their class or their religion, right? And just providing an insight as to what that experience, those experiences were like. I think that telling stories through sport very, very, again, just succinctly sums it up because there's so much more than just the numbers that you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was largely inspired by just the so many different people that I met as teammates growing up, both on the field and off the field. So sports storytelling, man, that's where I want to be. That's where I continue to carve out my own lane. And I think that I'm doing it in a very organic and unique way as well.
All right. That's Kyle John Kenai. I'm your host, William Holly, WBH Radio. Out.
Sir.